This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and welcome to the fifth episode in our ongoing series, Amazon, The Prime Effect, where we're examining how Amazon is changing the way you shop, work, and live. Now, Amazon has more than 1 million employees. It's got a market cap of more than $1.8 trillion. That's trillion with a T, and that's larger than the GDP of Canada, or South Korea, or Brazil. Amazon also delivers more than 10 billion items per year. So the question is, how do you even begin to understand the global environmental impact of such a gargantuan company? Well, let's begin with the most recognizable unit of Amazon's economic output: the box. So this summer, my kids somehow grew out of all of their shoes at once. So yes, I bought a bunch of new pairs from Amazon, and they arrived on Wednesday in that very recognizable box on my doorstep. So let's turn now to Anastasia O'Rourke. She is managing director of the Carbon Containment Lab at Yale's School of Environment. Anastasia, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you. Now, I'll admit I get those recognizable boxes and packages with some frequency at my house. So help us understand, if we are trying to fathom Amazon's environmental impact, where does the story of this box, say, that my kids' shoes arrived in, where does that story actually begin?
Great question. And I think we've all been in the same position, especially over the past, you know, year and a half, for obvious pandemic reasons, where we're all doing a lot more online ordering. But really, it starts with you, with the decision to buy those shoes or buy whatever it is you're buying from Amazon. So really, you could think about, you know, you're starting with making a decision to buy something, researching it a little. In this case, going onto Amazon.com and selecting the shoes and clicking that button. Once that happens, we can think about all of the different associated impacts, environmental impacts, with that box or with that those shoes in the box. So to just sort of walk that back a little bit, we can think about the packaging itself of the box itself, and that's often something very tangible. You know, it's very visible sort of show of, okay, there's, you know, a lot of potential waste associated with that. Is this being recycled? Like, what happens to that, you know, after we've used it for that period of time? So there's a whole set of impacts associated with that, depending on how, you know, the box is made, where is it from, what sorts of forests, you know, were used to grow the trees, to make the wood, to make the cardboard, et cetera. What's in the box.
Hold on for just one second, if you could, because let's still continue to just focus on that box and the material impact of the packaging and itself. I will note, though, before I forget, that when you said that the measuring the true environmental impact of Amazon starts with the consumer's decision, and the second I decided to click, there's also a whole associated set of environmental impacts with Amazon's, you know, cloud service, for example, that supports the Amazon marketplace that's activated every time I click on my Prime shipping. So we'll get to that in a second. But about that packaging, I just want to play something here for a second, because Oceana, a group of foundations working on ocean advocacy, released a report last year on the waste from the more than 10 billion Amazon packages that are shipped every year. And they say that Amazon used an estimated 465 million pounds of plastic packaging in 2019.
That's enough plastic packaging to circle the Earth more than 500 times in the form of air pillows. Oceana also found that an estimated 22 million pounds of this plastic packaging polluted the world's freshwater and marine ecosystems last year. That's equivalent to a delivery van's worth of plastic packaging polluting the ocean every 70 minutes.
Now, Amazon disputes that report, says it's a drastic overestimate, and they say the amount of packaging is only a quarter of that, but that's still 116 million pounds of plastic in 2019. Is that, I mean, just, I don't know, Anastasia, how we can understand that number other than it's still a lot.
It is still a lot. It also depends a lot on what you do with that waste once you're done with that box or that plastic packaging inside the box. So, and that's, you know, we put it in our recycling bins and we put it in our trash cans, but then what's the system for recycling or, you know, waste removal in your local area? And, you know, in the case of where I'm from in and where I live in Connecticut, we actually have a waste incineration plant, but many other places it's going to go to landfill. And in some other countries, it really does leak out into the environment and it is a problem. Mm-hmm. So it is a big impact on the packaging side for sure.
Yeah. So the packaging is one of the most materially recognizable aspects of Amazon's environmental impact. You were about to talk about a little bit upstream in terms of the delivery system that gets that packaging to consumer doorsteps. Let's listen to how Jeff Bezos himself describes that delivery system.
We have a lot of delivery vans, and they all burn fossil fuels today.
So that's Bezos in 2019. I mean, let's talk a little bit more, Anastasia, about the transportation piece of Amazon here.
Right. I think it's one of the, you know, big corporate key strategies is to be really fast and efficient with getting those packages to your doorstep. And the way that you do that is through a huge network of vans and trucks and distribution centers. And then further up the chain, we have shipping and planes and a big complex supply chain system to make that all happen. And today it is mostly fueled by fossil fuels. That is correct.
Mm. But in a few minutes, we'll talk about Amazon's commitment to electrify a lot of its delivery system, if I can put it that way, because I do want to acknowledge that they are moving in that direction. But shouldn't we also talk about so trucks, vans, distribution centers, and the power they consume, their rapidly growing fleet of airplanes as well, those are all directly under Amazon's control in terms of emissions impact. But I wonder if we should also be talking about just the third-party vendors and the sheer stuff that's being sold through Amazon. How do we quantify or understand the environmental impact of that aspect of the business?
So that is probably the largest set of impacts, actually, from this. But the question I have is kind of whether that's really Amazon's, you know, under their control or something that they're sort of enabling us all to do more of, to buy more of these, you know, goods and services through their platform. But it depending on what you're buying, there's going to be a huge range of environmental impacts associated with them. So you started off with the shoes example, and we could think of those shoes from a life cycle, like a full kind of life cycle point of view, where they were made, what sort of leather, you know, what sort of factories they're made in, or the dyes or the sewing, and then, you know, putting them together in boxes and then shipping them. So, but if we're talking about some very different product, some sort of electronic gadget, you'll have a very different set of impacts. So it's very hard to measure and very hard to generalize as to what the impacts are. And that's just sort of what's come before we use it. You can also think about from a life cycle point of view, you know, there's during our life. So when we're using the products themselves, sometimes they'll have impact, sometimes they won't. But if it's an electronic, you know, machine of some sort, then you're using energy while, you know, you use your laptop or you use your kitchen, you know, cooking equipment, etc. And then what happens to it when we're finally done with that product? And at the end of its life, there's also waste, you know, associated with that. So depending on what the product is, you know, it could be recycled or it could go into the landfill or it could have other issues associated with it. So you really need to think about these products and goods really through their full life cycle to get an understanding of that. But it's incredibly hard to measure and very sort of time intensive endeavor to try to measure all this stuff accurately.
So I guess the simple question is, and I don't even, it sounds like perhaps it's, there may not be an answer to it, but Amazon's environmental impact seems to be global, globe spanning, world spanning, tentacles everywhere. We as consumers are part of that equation. I mean, how would you quantify it? How would you describe what this company's impact is on the environment?
I mean, there's ways of doing sort of high-level descriptions that aggregate a lot of information just to get a real sense of it. It's also a question, do we want to spend time measuring it, or do we want to spend time and being really, really accurate with that, or do we want to spend time actually trying to address the biggest problems? So one of the things that I think many people in the environmental community are now working on is really prioritizing those impacts that are really pressing and material and problematic that we know enough to know we need to act on them now. And we don't need to measure every single sort of impact of every single paperclip here. We need to focus on those categories that are really that are big and problematic. And so I think that's the way to address it. Otherwise, we'll just have the, you know, paralysis by analysis problem.
Paralysis by analysis, because it's also such a vast amount of impact that could be analyzed. So we're headed towards a break here, and we're trying to get wrap our minds around what Amazon's environmental impact is as part of our series of Amazon, The Prime Effect. And when we come back from the break, we're going to be hearing from employees, current and former employees of Amazon, and their attempts to push the company to be more environmentally responsible. For example, this is Eliza Pan, who's in Seattle, former Amazon employee who endured the record-breaking heat the Pacific Northwest has been experiencing. And here's what she told us.
You know, most places in Seattle weren't built with air conditioning because Seattle historically has never needed air conditioning because temperatures here have never gotten that hot. The heat wave made it very clear that we are running out of time. And companies like Amazon, who are so huge and have such a big impact on so many different places, need to move a lot faster and need to stop actively making the problem worse.
We'll be back with a lot more. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're in the fifth episode of our series on Amazon that we're calling The Prime Effect, where we're taking a look at all the ways that Amazon is changing the way you shop, work, and live. And today, we are trying to understand Amazon's environmental impact, and in a few minutes, we'll be evaluating Amazon's recent commitments to reduce that impact. I'm joined today by Anastasia O'Rourke. She's Managing Director of the Yale Carbon Containment Center at the Yale School of the Environment. And Anastasia, if you could just listen along with me, I want us to hear a conversation we had with a former Amazon employee. Now, as I know you know, Anastasia, Amazon did in fact release a corporate climate pledge. It was a major announcement, given the size of Amazon, back on September 19th, 2019. Now, that was just after Eliza Pan left Amazon. She had been working there from 2013 to 2019 as a program manager for Amazon's last mile delivery and as a business practices manager for Amazon Web Services at the company's Seattle corporate headquarters.
The more I learned about climate change, the more I started wondering, well, what is Amazon doing about its climate impact? And when I started looking into it, I realized Amazon was doing very little on climate. I couldn't believe that a company of Amazon's size did not have a company-wide climate plan.
It was an unwelcome revelation, Eliza says. She had loved her job and loved working for such an innovative company.
I felt very conflicted because I was working for corporate Amazon while, you know, my hometown and people I knew were working in warehouses and so would, you know, see trucks thundering down their road, like literally every day. And I remember talking to people who worked in Amazon sustainability, and they were all, and I'm sure they still are, all really passionate people. But what I saw was that they were providing all this kind of great data and recommendations, but nobody had to actually take up their recommendations, including, you know, my team. My last team at Amazon, I worked in Amazon delivery because I wanted to get closer to Amazon's source of emissions. And I found out, you know, very quickly that emissions were not even something that my org was tracking at that time at all. I was talking to people about climate change because I thought it was a really big problem. And I, there were other people who were also coming to this realization themselves and doing that. And so, you know, we met, you're right. Like when you poke around seeing, hey, who else wants to talk about climate change? There are going to be people who say, hey, I want to talk about this.
Those people came together, and in 2018, Eliza co-founded AECJ, or Amazon Employees for Climate Justice.
At that point, Amazon didn't even release its carbon footprint. There wasn't even any carbon footprint data to be had. Why was this seen as such a sideshow? Why was this not a priority of the company?
Amazon is a massive and complex trillion-dollar company. And as we've learned over the course of reporting this series, when Amazon wants to accomplish something, it happens. For example, in Brad Stone's book, Amazon Unbound, he tells a story about a Swedish customer who emailed Jeff Bezos at 2 a.m. Seattle time, asking why Amazon was waiting to develop language-specific versions of Alexa before introducing the Echo in Europe. Well, that caught Bezos' attention. And by the next morning, half a dozen groups were working to sell Alexa in 80 new countries. So Eliza questions why Amazon didn't move with the same speed on climate action.
Walmart has been ahead of Amazon in terms of its retail sustainability for many years now. And so, yes, it is absolutely a complicated business. But to say that a company of Amazon's size and that has Amazon's resources in terms of both human capital and in terms of revenue and money, to say that it's a hard task for them to do is actually, I think, kind of insulting to a company like Amazon, where it's clear that if Amazon prioritizes solving a problem, it can do it.
So in December 2018, AECJ took action. The group filed a shareholder resolution to the Amazon board asking for a company-wide climate plan.
It was a very eye-opening experience. After we filed, we got a couple of meetings with Amazon leadership, actually, and they were very dismissive about our concerns. You know, when we asked them when they were planning on releasing their carbon footprint, or even when they would announce a date to release their carbon footprint, they said that they had no plans to do so publicly. After that meeting, like I said, we were very shocked and angry. And so we started drafting a letter to Jeff Bezos and the board. And we started gathering signatures for that letter to ask that they do a lot more. And, you know, Amazon leadership found out about this letter. And what they did was they then announced Shipment Zero, which this was before the Climate Pledge. So Shipment Zero is Amazon's first ever commitment to reduce emissions. However, it's very misleadingly named. It's actually a commitment to reduce 50% of Amazon's shipments to net zero emissions. So it should really be called Shipment 50, not Shipment Zero. But literally the day after Shipment Zero was announced, Amazon reached out to us and said, hey, will you withdraw your resolution now? And we asked why. And they said, well, because we announced Shipment Zero, so we met your concerns. The timing of these announcements makes it very clear that these announcements were meant to really deter employees from speaking up.
For example, Amazon made the major announcement about its company-wide climate pledge on September 19th, 2019. Eliza Pan says that was just 24 hours before Amazon Employees for Climate Justice had planned a corporate walkout.
And we had not been secretive about this walkout. They had known that this walkout was coming for at least a month, I think more than a month already. But even if you want to be really skeptical and say that this timing is all a coincidence, I don't think there's any doubt that Amazon's commitments became bolder and faster than what they had originally planned. As I've said, it's not that Amazon was doing nothing before Amazon Employees for Climate Justice, but what Amazon was doing was one-off projects, very slow. And what AECJ did was pressure Amazon to go much faster and much bigger. And as we know with the climate crisis, time and speed really matter. It's not something that we can just keep putting off anymore, unfortunately.
Eliza Pan is co-founder of Amazon Employees for Climate Justice. She left the company in 2019. Now, we asked Amazon about AECJ's claims that the group influenced the company's climate pledge, and a spokesperson told us, quote, Amazon's climate pledge and commitment to net zero carbon was not in response to employee pressure. Amazon has a longstanding commitment to sustainability and laid out plans in 2016 to set bold targets. We accelerated those plans in 2019 in response to the latest climate science, end quote. All right, well, let's talk more about that pledge in particular, specifically that September 2019 pledge. And joining us now from Devon in the United Kingdom is Tom Rivett-Carnac. He's former chief political strategist for the Paris Climate Agreement at the UN Climate Convention, meaning that he and Cristiana Figueres are best known for negotiating the historic Paris Climate Agreement in 2015. And recently, he helped Amazon develop its climate pledge that they announced in 2019. Tom, welcome to On Point.
Great to be here.
So what has Amazon pledged to do regarding its climate impact?
So Amazon came out in 2019 and committed to be net zero by 2040. So that is 10 years ahead of the Paris Agreement. The best science when we negotiated the agreement between governments in 2015 was that we needed to reduce our impact on the climate to nothing by the middle of the century. And the whole organizing idea behind the climate pledge is that if that's what the world's governments are saying, then Amazon wanted to go faster. And so created this climate pledge that requires companies that sign up, and Amazon was the first signatory, to be transparent about their emissions according to commonly recognized standards and to disclose that publicly, to reduce their emissions through genuine reductions in business processes, in everything they do in transportation and heating and cooling, to get that down really as far as it can. And then with the residual rump of emissions that can't be reduced, to buy credible, reliable, permanent offsets to get that down to zero. So that's the plan.
Yeah, I just want to, I just cannot help myself. I have to make the point that Amazon, when it decides to do something, it does go big. It decided to get one of the co-authors of the Paris Climate Agreement, essentially, to help the company write its own climate pledge. Now, I would like you to help us understand, and Anastasia, I'm going to want to get your view on this also in a second, between the concept of net zero emissions, which Amazon talks a lot about in its corporate communications regarding its pledge, versus actually reducing overall emissions down to zero. Why did Amazon choose the net zero option?
Well, so this is not uncommon, right, mm-hmm. in how companies and indeed countries think about meeting their climate commitments. There's a general recognition that we need to reduce emissions as fast as possible. But what scientists will tell you is that we have left climate change so late that it's now very unlikely that we can reduce emissions fast enough to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. And so we need to do both. We need to reduce the emissions as quickly as we can. And at the same time, we need to take action to remove the pollution that's already in the atmosphere in order to bring it down to a safe level. That involves restoring degraded land, planting trees where that's appropriate, restoring nature in all kinds of other ways, and maybe down the line, other kinds of direct air capture that actually suck carbon out of the atmosphere. So that's the difference between the two. And the reason for the net, and this is the subject of much debate at the moment, is that companies are coming out and being as ambitious as they can be, but it's difficult to see getting to absolute zero. And What the argument that I've heard and that I have some sympathy for is we shouldn't allow that fact to stop us from doing what we can now. We need to reduce emissions as quickly as we can through real reductions right away. And down the line, we also need to invest in nature. And as technology improves and as the economics improve, maybe we will get to absolute zero down the road. But whether that's the case or not, we need to start now.
Anastasia, I wonder what you think about that, though, because I'm looking at another major retailer, Walmart, which Eliza mentioned earlier in that audio postcard, essentially, that you heard from her. Walmart's own climate pledge, I'm looking at it right now, it says Walmart is targeting zero emissions across its global operations by 2040 without relying on carbon offsets. Its goal is to power its facilities with 100% renewable energy by 2035 globally. So that's what Walmart says it wants to do. Is Amazon being ambitious enough?
I think that they're playing a bit of catch up at this point because they did start their environmental sustainability work kind of late in the game compared to some of their competitors and compared to many other sectors. But as you noted, they do move quickly and move strongly when they move. They're also really supported by a huge team of people working on this. So I think that we'll see them catch up and maybe even overtake some of these commitments in the future. I think it comes down to where you draw the boundary around a company's responsibility as to, you know, how ambitious it is. So if you're including all of these products and services that Amazon is selling on its platform as part of its responsibility, then that's a massive undertaking that they've just committed to. If Walmart, for example, is also including all of the products and services that it sells on its shelves and through its retail, then I don't think they're going to be reaching net zero or zero emissions with all of that included. So it sort of depends how you draw the boundaries around some of these commitments as to sort of how ambitious it is. But I do think Amazon is making some pretty big financial commitments to, you know, the innovation end of the spectrum, realizing that they have these really hard to avoid emissions right now where there really isn't sustainable aviation fuel, for example, of sufficient quantities that they would need and still run their business the way they want to run it. So, you know, what are we going to do? So they are looking ahead and trying to invest in the new technologies, new approaches to creating those sorts of energy sources that have less impact in the future. And that's great. And we need to see more of that. So while, yes, we can critique this, that and the other of their approach, I'm actually fundamentally pretty excited that they're taking such a big stance right now and putting their both financial resources into it as well as their staffing and their sort of analytical prowess to helping find solutions here.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, let me just jump in here because you were right to point out that is Walmart including all of its, you know, its other vendors and suppliers in its zero emissions target. And in fact, it's not, because it says because most of Walmart's environmental impact comes from its supply chain, Walmart is also working with those suppliers through its Project Gigaton initiative to avoid a gigaton of greenhouse gas emissions. So that's different than absolute zero that they're targeting for their own operations. That's Walmart. But Tom Rivett Karnack, let me turn back to you here, because I think what's really, really important to understand is something that Anastasia pointed out earlier. And that is, as far as I can see, when we're talking about the different areas of environmental impact, they're sort of roughly categorized as scope one, scope two, scope three. And the smaller the number, the closer it is to the company's own control. But those scope three impacts with vendors, suppliers, supply chain, et cetera, for Amazon, isn't that the vast majority of its environmental impact is perhaps beyond its direct control and reach in terms of trying to reduce overall emissions?
Well, that's true of every company.
Okay.
You know, every company, actually, the scope three. So scope one is the fuel that you actually combust to do your business, to drive around in your trucks, for example. Scope two is the fuel that's combusted on your behalf to, for example, create the electricity you need for heating and cooling. And scope three is the kind of the vast everything else. So that's supply chain emissions, emissions of the use of your products. And, you know, for example, in financial services companies, that includes the emissions that come from the capital that they deploy in different companies. So scope three is usually north of 90% of the overall impact of a company if you calculate that properly. And what best practice looks like is doing your best to get your arms around certain segments of scope three, and you do it a piece at a time. So you might look at how your products are used and are there ways you can nudge consumers to reduce their emissions. You might also look at the products that you yourself produce, and that is absolutely something Amazon are doing, is looking at the products that are made for sale on the site that are Amazon branded, and they're driving those emissions down as part of their scope three commitment.
Well, Tom Rivett-Carnac and Anastasia O'Rourke, stand by here. We have a lot more to talk about when it comes to understanding Amazon's environmental impact and what the company says it's trying to do to reduce it. We'll be back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Today is episode 5 of our ongoing series that we're calling Amazon, The Prime Effect, where we're taking a look at all the ways in which Amazon is changing the way you shop, work, and live. And today, we are examining Amazon's environmental impact and the commitment the company has made to reduce that impact. I'm joined today by Anastasia O'Rourke. She's managing director of the Yale Carbon Containment Center at the Yale School of the Environment. And Tom Rivett-Carnac joins us as well. He's one of the co-authors of the historic 2015 Paris Climate Agreement, and he helped Amazon develop its climate pledge in 2019 as well. He's co-author of The Future We Choose, The Stubborn Optimist's Guide to the Climate Crisis. Now let's listen to Jeff Bezos, now former CEO of Amazon, but obviously still the heart of the company, at the company's climate pledge announcement in 2019. Here's a bit of what he said.
One of the things that we know about Amazon as a role model for this is that our business is, it's a difficult challenge for us because we have deep, large physical infrastructure. We're not only moving information around, we're moving packages around. We deliver 10 billion items, more than 10 billion items a year. This is real physical infrastructure at real scale. And so we can make the argument, and we plan to do so passionately, that if we can do this, anyone can do this.
Now, some of Amazon's own employees object to this part of what Jeff Bezos is saying. They claim Amazon is not doing enough. Now, we have granted these employees anonymity because of their significant fears of retaliation from Amazon. In 2020, Amazon fired 2 employees who were publicly critical of the company's climate policies, and the National Labor Relations Board did determine in April that Amazon illegally retaliated against those employees. So that's the reason why we've granted these current employees anonymity. And here's what one of them told us about his concerns.
I am shocked and angry that Amazon is not acknowledging the effects of the pollution from its operations that disproportionately impacts communities of color. Thousands of diesel trucks pass through these communities every day, past schools and residential areas, harming the health of those who live there. Amazon's climate pledge only commits to electrifying the last mile of its fleet. Amazon continues to harm these communities because it doesn't admit that there is a problem.
Tom Rivett-Carnac, respond to that about just specifically the piece about the pledge only committing to electrifying the last mile of Amazon's fleet. What's your response to that?
Well, my understanding, and bear in mind that my role in this is as a co-founder of the Climate Pledge. And the Climate Pledge is a commitment to bring other companies on board. That's a big part of what we founded in 2019, is that actually the pledge is a commitment to net zero by 2040. Amazon was the first member. There's now more than 100. But what I would say specifically to that, which is an Amazon-specific issue, which is less the area that I'm focused on, is that my understanding is that they're committed to electrifying delivery. And right now, they have invested in 100,000 electric vehicles from Rivian. Those are already on the streets in LA, will be in 15 cities by the end of the year, I think. And they are committed. That's the first step. I believe that probably is the last mile of delivery. But all the conversations I've had with them is that they are committed to decarbonizing their transportation. And a big part of what they're doing this year that I've been really impressed with is called the Climate Pledge Fund. That's part of what we've seen them launch as part of their commitment. That's a $2 billion fund. And through that, they're deploying capital in new and innovative companies that can really help them break through in different sectors of their activities, whether it's hydrogen flights or whether it's electric vehicles or nature-based solutions. So I think coming out of that and other initiatives, we'll see quite a bit of additional technology that can actually help with many of these other challenges, which are difficult for everyone.
Mm. You know, Anastasia, one of the most fascinating things about any discussion about Amazon is that it's so large that when it does make a commitment to do anything, even if it's relatively small for the company, it's potentially, it can transform entire markets, right? Amazon agreeing to purchase 100,000 electric trucks essentially creates a market for those vehicles that didn't exist before, and it does so overnight. But I do wonder, Anastasia, I mean, you had mentioned this earlier, so let's talk about it in more detail. For a company like Amazon specifically, you said it's important to focus on the things that can change, right? So what actions do you think Amazon could take that would produce the most significant impact in reducing its climate impacts?
I think there's a few things that I can see they could do more of, and I want to recognize all of the great work that's already going on there, and some of the pledge work in particular, and the fund that was just mentioned is really great. It's just going to take a while until those things come to pass, and technologies are developed and deployed. It takes quite a while. So in the meantime, I'd like to see them really on the sustainable consumption side, helping use their power and influence over consumers to guide them towards making more sustainable choices. They do have a climate pledge friendly program. It's kind of a certification of certifications that you can find, eco-friendly and green products. But you need to know about that program to even find it. So it's not necessarily something that they're putting front and center yet. And I'd love to see them expand that program and make it much more obvious to all consumers, and to really help us put those, greener, safer, more environmentally friendly goods and services, products right in front of us, and nudge us towards those options, because that has a huge cascading effect deep down into all of those supply chains. And then another thing, I think, we talked a little bit about these scope 3 emissions and how they, especially for retail or service companies, really the vast majority of emissions for those companies. I looked a little bit at their supplier engagement program, and it doesn't really address climate right now. Mm. So it's possible that they're working on this behind the scenes and they're not yet talking about it. But their supplier engagement programs right now are really around labor issues and risk mitigation of sort of finding and controlling for any really major labor violation issues, all around the world. And that's great, but they're not really dealing with climate yet. And so I'd love to see them work more on that. And then thirdly, to meet their net zero goals, they are going to need offsets, carbon offsets, and they do have some principles that they're laying out of how they're going to select those. However, I've been working a lot on these carbon offsets at Yale, and I can tell you that there just aren't enough credible ones out right there today to really meet the need that's coming down the line from all of these companies making these net zero pledges. So I think we collectively need to come up with some really great, very high quality carbon offset programs, in particular in carbon removal, to really be able to meaningfully contribute to these net zero goals. Mm-hmm. So those are the three main areas I think that they could, you know, expand their work on.
Okay, so Tom Rivett-Carnac, the question of offsets and just overall carbon emissions is very, very important. And this is where I would like you to sort of bring in your experience with the Paris Climate Agreement from 2015, because I'm looking at Amazon's just recently released sustainability report, okay? And they show that their overall carbon footprint has actually increased by 19% from 2018. And so part of that is that there was just a vast increase in consumption in 2020 because of the pandemic. People moved to a ton of online shopping. So overall carbon footprint increases by 2019 in terms of emissions. But Amazon continuously points to what's known as carbon intensity or carbon output per unit of economic creation, essentially. So they're saying that their carbon intensity has gone down. So they're producing more, but the amount of carbon per production unit is less. But honestly, isn't it that total footprint that really matters when it comes to trying to do something about climate change, Tom?
Well, I mean, look, at the end of the day, we are trying to help the ice caps melt as slowly as possible, would be one way to put it. And that is to do with the total volume of carbon in the atmosphere. And you're absolutely right. We need to find a way to, all of us, drive down emissions as fast as possible. And anyone who's looking at the impacts that are currently happening around the world will realize that this is our last chance to really do this in a significant way. And that's on every single company around the world to be as innovative, and country and individual, by the way, and city, be as innovative and as creative as possible in doing everything that we can. Now, I do think that Amazon are strong allies on that journey. And I realize that the number that you gave, the emissions have gone up 19% last year. I understand the company grew by double that. Mm-hmm. So it's undeniably mm-hmm. true that the emissions intensity has gone down. It's also true that many of the changes that Amazon are making may take a little longer to come through. I mean, they're electrifying their fleet, they're shifting to renewable energy, their scope 2 emissions actually went down, I understand, last year because they're purchasing so much more renewable energy. As was previously said, they're nudging consumers towards more sustainable choices. They are encouraging other companies to come and join the pledge. So this is a difficult, complex transformation that requires information, organization, and investment to change. At the end of the day, we all have to reach net zero emissions. That's absolutely true. But we need to do that with a plan to invest in the right technologies to really make a transformation. So, I mean, Amazon are on the journey. And I think, you know, as was said earlier by Anastasia, there are brilliant people inside the organization that are really working to transform it. They've got capital, they're deploying that effectively, they're thinking about the future. I'm confident that this will get turned around and that we will see absolute reductions. But it's tough when the business is growing so fast.
Mm. Well, let's listen to another one of those people inside of Amazon. This is a current employee who told us why it was important for her to keep pushing the company to do more.
I don't see fighting for climate action as counter to what Amazon's trying to do. I see it as part of my role as a worker. This is going to affect me. If I want to work at a West Coast tech office, I want to be able to not have wildfire smoke in the summer. You know, I want to know that our diesel trucks are not polluting communities every single day. So this is part of my work, is continuing to speak up for this. And I'm inspired by my coworkers who want to do the same.
And again, we've offered the employees anonymity due to their concerns about possible retaliation from Amazon. So, Anastasia, it's so interesting that we actually heard from a number of current employees inside the company. I'm wondering if there are also other areas in which there are levers for accountability. Eliza Pan earlier talked about, you know, trying to file a shareholder resolution. With a company as large as Amazon, what do you think some of those other levers are to continue to encourage Amazon to do more?
There's a few big ones. One is the investor community. So with the shareholder activist campaigns is one thing, but there's just also large pension funds and other endowments and big institutional investors, banks, etc., who are looking ahead and seeing huge climate risk and are really concerned about it. and have been putting pressure on companies to really step up their game and invest in the future to make sure that the worst doesn't occur. So that's one big lever. But I think also with Amazon, it's the customer. They're a very customer-oriented company in all dimensions. And I think that insofar as customers can come together and really express their desire for Amazon to keep going on this journey or to do more, mm-hmm. I think they're going to listen to that, especially in their enterprise customers and their large sort of institutional buyers. They have web services and so on. I think that is a great lever on the company as well.
Tom Rivett Carnac, we have about 30 seconds left, and I will ask you one more question here. Given the global impact of major companies like Amazon, do you actually think they're possibly uniquely positioned to nudge governments to do more to meet their Paris Climate Accord agreements?
Look, the modern corporation is the most powerful actor in the world, along with investors. And actually, they can drive demand, they can change all sorts of things about the way we live, and they can absolutely influence policy as well. I am a huge pragmatist when it comes to this issue. I always try to look for where is the needle and how can I move it. Right now, I'm seeing in Amazon a commitment to really make the difference across all areas of their work, from reducing their emissions to bringing other corporations with them to engaging with government. And I think that could be a really powerful series of actors and allies in the next most decisive decade that we're facing.
Mm. Tom Rivett Carnac, founding partner of Global Optimism, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Anastasia O'Rourke, managing director of the Yale Carbon Containment Center at the Yale School of Environment. Great pleasure to have you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course, the ongoing question with Amazon, with anything regarding the environment especially, is can they do more? We'll keep thinking about that. Now, coming up next in our series about Amazon, we're going to be talking about Amazon's relationship with its workforce. Yes, the labor question. In a previous episode, you heard from former Amazon Web Services Vice President Tim Bray, who had this to say about his time at AWS.
It was a great place to work. They were super fussy about their hiring. The density of difficult people was very low. The relationships with the customers were wonderful. They were doing such fascinating stuff. The business was successful. It was growing fast. If you needed to spend money to accomplish something, you could. It's by wide margin the best job I ever had.
Nevertheless, Tim Bray also said that he left Amazon because of the way it treated other workers, specifically Amazon whistleblowers who were fired. And earlier this year, we spoke with Amazon warehouse workers in Bessemer, Alabama, as they were undergoing a union drive. Jennifer Bates told us that working for Amazon isn't so great.
There's no respect to employees from my view of things that I've seen, you know. And I think it's done because it's like power. Because they have the power to do it and we don't have anyone to back us. It's just like I said, Amazon has representation from a lawyer, but they don't expect you to have one.
Well, Amazon employs more than 1.2 million people around the world. So, of course, there are going to be many different kinds of employment experiences with this vast company. So we want to hear from you. If you currently work at Amazon or at one time worked for the company in the past, what were your experiences like? What are they like? Call and leave us a voicemail at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for our upcoming episode on Amazon and its relationship with its workforce. And if you want to catch up on other episodes in our series, The Prime Effect, hop on over to onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.